Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and you are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana, and this week I want to continue my focus on a sense of wonder and the people locally that have been inspired to action. I'll be interviewing some of those people in the second half of the show. Right now, here is today's Desert Oracle Radio episode, Empty Churches for Fun and Nonprofit. And I believe this episode is from January 19th, 2022.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And I was just driving by some of the mostly abandoned churches out here in the California desert. A lot of good community real estate, mostly, if not totally, abandoned. How do you take over a church? I don't mean the big, powerful ones, whether the suburban megachurch or the Vatican or whatever. I mean just a little old church, a religious nonprofit, just sitting there, nobody's using it. I guess all you've got to do is find the person who runs the joint, maybe it's down to the last person, the organist or whoever, the fourth junior deacon. And maybe you show up in a black suit with a briefcase and pretend to be an angel or something. The angels could disguise themselves as anything in the Bible days. Like the Men in Black back in the 1950s, these oddballs pretending to be some kind of government agents. Speaking tough guy talk from old movies. Listen, smart guy. Plenty of stuff could go wrong for you real quick. Maybe keep it zippered when you get the itch to tell your buddies about the Martians wearing diving helmets and Batman capes, milling around the crossroads at 2 a.m. Angels were constantly in a sort of psychic disguise. God knows what they really look like. Probably something like the deadlights in Stephen King's book, It. Just horrible, unspeakable orbs of crackling energy just outside our range of vision. And then, crack. There's often a crack when these things appear and disappear, and suddenly, well, here's some visiting Bedouin coming by your tent. And even though the whole encounter is so strange, you go along with it. You are powerless to do anything else, really. So off he goes to the barn with your daughter. I guess not a barn, whatever the Bible story. This scenario comes up a lot. With Hagar and Abraham. Is it Hagar? Hagar the Horrible? And then later they realize, oh, that was really the angel of the Lord. I mean, whatever that is. But like the Phoenix Lights, which only showed up on videotape as these featureless orbs in a V-shape or a big line across the sky, maybe the angels are just these blobs of intelligent energy with the same psychic powers common to the UFOs and their related entities. The humans who saw the Phoenix Lights up close swore these massive craft were the most over-the-top things. Clear as day and directly overhead. You could have hit it with a rock. People said that again and again, but nobody tried because they were hypnotized. They were enchanted. Some people saw elaborate fantasy craft with rainbow plumes of exhaust fluttering behind the slow-moving boomerangs. As if the thing was actually shooting through the sky. Instead of moving at walking pace over the northern suburbs of Phoenix. Some people saw all kinds of pipes and vents and ductwork just covering the enormous hulls, like the details on the model of the Death Star, which was built out of spray-painted foam and plumbing fittings and plastic military plane models by the young hippies at Industrial Light and Magic in the San Fernando Valley. And filmed outside in the parking lot back in 1976 with that brilliant Southern California sunshine as the outdoor lighting for those Death Star trench runs. The thing about the angel of the Lord is sometimes it starts talking about God in the first person. And then you realize, oh boy, it's the main God just walking around. Getting over-involved in the lives of nomads who are basically just fighting with their own adult children over grazing rights. Sort of like the Bundys over in Nevada. So there you are. At the front door of the only surviving member of the Congregational Government of First Community Church of the Blessed Creosote, and it's time to make your move. Just sign this, and I will become the director of the board of the church, you say? Whatever the title is. The Lord has sent me to take this tiresome burden off thine hands, etc. Or just tell the truth. Listen, nobody goes to this church anymore. And nobody even works here. So why not hand it and the property tax bills over to me, your new pastor, the Right Reverend, and I'll make good use of it. For the community. Let me tell you what churches can offer you if you're wondering how to make where you live a better and more interesting place. Churches are nonprofits with really the lightest form of state or federal oversight. This is because of whatever it's called, the United States Bill of Rights. Always funny to remember that the Bill of Rights was an add-on, not part of the U.S. Constitution as created by all those founding fathers during the plague in Philadelphia. Most of those disputes, as recounted in James Madison's Notes on the Constitutional Convention, regarded what was an acceptable plague mask. Benjamin Franklin, always the wit, insisted that a pair of underwear made the best pandemic mask. And then they sent him to France. And then came the Bill of Rights, which has pretty much just enraged everybody for one reason or another ever since. But for our purposes, which is taking over underused churches in your community, it's a good thing. Thank you. Churches have catering facilities, kitchens, and storage pantries, and seating for lots of people. You can have weddings there, and a community garden, and weekly movie nights, and bingo, which is legal gambling as a fundraiser. It's incredible. You can have concerts, whatever you want. Punk rock, hip-hop, string quartets. And especially any kind of modern classical or ambient. Which just sounds fantastic in most church sanctuaries because of the resonance of the wooden pews and the natural echo from the high ceilings. The sanctuary is called the nave, really, but Americans don't say nave unless they're Catholic or Episcopalian or maybe Scientologist. An interesting fact is that the word navy comes from nave. Because the nave is the ark. And at least some arks are boats. Noah's Ark, for instance. There probably really was a Noah or somebody like him. Somewhere in the Near East, where the Great Flood really did wipe out a lot of low-lying agricultural settlements. I like to think it was an accident. Like in Louisiana, where everybody has a boat, and the dad would go sleep on the boat and drink beer and listen to the ball game when he got tired of the dreary annoyances and abuse of home life. And then he wakes up and, all the land is gone. It's just him and two of every animal. Two stray cats that were hunting vermin on the deck. Two rats they had not caught yet. And two bulldogs, unfortunately both male. Churches often have a preschool, very handy these days for all the kids in and out of the public schools. And churches often have low-power legal radio transmitters. Think about that. Some even have access to the local cable TV system with the video cameras and everything. You get yourself a little church and you just might get yourself a community radio station, a community television station, the whole deal. What's not to like? Now, if you're thinking, well, I don't even believe in a religion, then I've got some good news for you. I bring you good news and glad tidings. Hardly anybody believes in a religion. It's just identity politics. Fitting in, something to do. It's social. Look at the Unitarians. They don't believe in anything beyond their own self-righteousness. Could you have, say, a pagan church? Oh, hell yeah. 100%. Pagan just means country people. And if you're out here in a small desert town, then you are the country people. What's important to you and the people that you would like to convene with on a regular basis? Maybe protecting wilderness and ecosystems. Community gardens for socializing. And the wonderful enjoyment of bringing home a bunch of fresh greens that you can just throw in the oven with some olive oil and salt and pepper. Even kale tastes good like that. Most American churches are non-denominational, which just means they are not part of a larger grouping. Some join a confederation of similar churches, like the various branches of the Baptist, who, to be fair, have not lived up to the awesome weirdness of their supposed founder, John the Baptizer. Who, if you can believe the Gospels, was supposed to be the real Messiah. He was a true wild man who was loved by the gentry, the guilty people of wealth and taste. And then he was executed as a sort of party favor given by a decrepit old king to a pretty young girl to impress her. But she was repulsed, as should have been expected. And then no more John the Baptist. Although the original religion that followed John still exists in a few pockets of the world, despite being hunted to near extinction, first by the Roman Church, and then by the Muslim bosses who eventually took over the region. Mandaeans, the Gnostic religious group that reveres John the Baptist above all prophets, still exist. The name comes from the Aramaic mandaea, meaning having knowledge, gnosis, knowing. And mandala, if you're wondering, comes from Sanskrit and is now used around the world to describe the sacred circular patterns that help us enter a spiritual trance, to know God. If you've ever gone to an old cathedral and been entranced by the circular stained glass works, you are getting some spiritual knowledge from the mandala. Manda in Aramaic. Mada in Hebrew, from the root word yada. Intelligence, consciousness, knowledge, science, which isn't the same as yada yada, which was popularized by Lenny Bruce, doing a priest character. And is maybe from the Scottish yadder yadder, which means blather, to chatter continuously. Speaking of John the Baptist, the Mandaean prophet of wisdom, a lot of American churches have a baptismal too. Use it as you see fit. Nothing wrong with baptizing people if they're up for it. The easiest way to get a church, of course, is to buy it. Buy the real estate. Take over the nonprofit corporation if you can. Or just start your own. Start your own religious nonprofit. I'm astounded more people don't do it. Of course, I'm astounded by all the things nobody does, even though they're easy things to do and endlessly satisfying. But in an absurdly overregulated civilization, at least in America, it's very easy to have a church. The problem is that most people, younger adults and young people especially, don't have any interest in church because they lack imagination. They are not following their creative urges. Yes, you can buy a church and you can put your crystals everywhere and have different yoga sessions every night of the week and a community lending library of books and movies and gardening tools and household tools. You can be a preacher, a pastor, a religious officiant, and it's not hard. I'm even a reverend, after all. And I have been for 20 years. I take it seriously. I have performed my duties as clergy when requested. Weddings, memorial services, etc. Why not do your job if people want you to do it? Everybody acts like Patreon and Amazon tip jars are some new method of keeping creative people employed, but the original patron of arts is the church. whatever church and whatever culture or time. And the original Amazon tip jar is, of course, the empty wine jar that the crowd passed up to Jesus at that one wedding one time. "Fill her up," they said. Things are outrageously difficult for most of us around the world. If we happen to be doing okay with money, we are very much not doing okay with life, with community, with saving our climate and our human environment where we live, with spending our days in meaningful pursuit of meaningful goals and meaningful work. We are stuck in a peculiar mode of panicked late capitalism that is especially frustrating and feels very much at a breaking point. The pandemic and all the related chaos has made a lot of people seriously face the question of, why am I bothering? It's not new to human society, this longing, this dissatisfaction. But the deeply unsettled and remote joylessness and fear of it all sure makes it feel worse right now. Some things are going to change, at least enough to open a giant steam valve to release the pressures of so many deeply frustrated and unhappy people. Our every ambition does not have to be wrapped around a desire, an unlikely outcome of getting rich. One thing I would like to do if I got hold of a church is to work on the aspect of prayer. The problem with prayer is that it's a wish. So you use up your energy, your willpower, in wishing. Wishing is a mental action, but it doesn't translate into the physical reality we live in outside of our heads. Chanting and invocations and mantras do work because they do what they are supposed to do. They calm the mind and the soul. They bring us peace in our time. But the American kind of prayer really doesn't work because you're just wishing things were different. If you go with more of a magic ritual sort of deal, as the actual prophets did, then you go from wishing to action. Because magical intent is simply deciding that something is going to happen, something plausible, something that can reasonably manifest in your world with the help of your mental and physical effort and whatever you call upon for help. And then you are simply on the lookout for the opportunity for it to happen. If your magic is directed at the usual things people have always gone to magic for, love, money, healing, then you have got to be willing to take what you can get. The money might be $5 you find in an old coat pocket, or it might be new income or a good investment return. Love may come, but it might not be just like you imagined. Oh well, sometimes it doesn't come at all. So maybe take what fate brings to the table. None of us will live forever. Many of us will go before our time. And nothing is ever perfect. But you can be physically and mentally and spiritually and psychically happier with a few changes, you know? Being outside makes you feel alive. Eating something decent makes you feel better than another Western double bacon cheeseburger combo. And cutting out the stuff that stresses you out, like a commute or a psychic vampire. That is a kind of healing, and it counts. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, and I am your host, Ken Lane. Soundscapes tonight were dreamed up and made into reality by our own Red Blue Black Silver of the High Desert. Go check out his internet music page on Bandcamp, including his new album, Five Flora, Volume 2. This morning I had the most beautiful walk, and it really cheered me up. You see, the regular place I go in the mornings is still in the shadows at 7 a.m. when I get out there. And as cold as a well digger's legs in that cold water. It was 30 degrees Fahrenheit this morning, with no sunshine to make it tenable, so I thought, well, let's just slip into the Gateway Parcel. That's the enormous 600-plus acres of Joshua Tree woodland between Yucca Valley and Joshua Tree, purchased and maintained by the Mojave Desert Land Trust several years ago, because that land was already in the sunlight, and as I pulled up, there was the biggest family of coyotes I've ever seen at one time, doing what they do, making use of the wildlife corridors the Gateway Preserve protects. There were a couple of huge adult males. I mean, it looked like some of Joe Biden's German police dogs escaped, you know? And my dog was losing it, just howling in the back. Do you not see all those coyotes? Well, I saw them. I let them pass. And they gave me a lot of heavy glances as they ambled by, mutual respect for the moment, as long as I deserve it, until I eventually fall from misfortune or misadventure, and then they can have at me. So we got out, and we had the most beautiful morning hike, San Gorgonio, covered in snow to the west. The warm sun on my back, even though it never got out of the mid-30s. So thanks to the Mojave Desert Land Trust for taking care of that place. For all of us, for the kids too, you know, the junior high borders it on the western edge. That whole living science biology lab is right there. Get out of those COVID classrooms, kids. Go run around and get some cholla in your underutilized ankles. Good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. In today's episode, Ken talked about meaningful work. Well, today I'm bringing a couple of people that have been inspired to do work meaningful to our community and our environment. One of our KGVM DJs, Monica, brought the following group to my attention. Do you know about the Gateway Conservation Alliance? Well, now you will. So, Tracy, can you tell me your official position and who you're with?
Yes. So Tracy Gibbons, I am the board president of Gateway Conservation Alliance. We call ourselves our GCA for short because it's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Yep, and we operate out of Gallatin Gateway, Montana.
Okay. And why did this group come to be?
Yes. So a few years ago, legislation passed a law, HB 599, which reduced the community's input on gravel pits and mining. And we have a gravel pit that was permitted in our community, in the heart of our community, 129 acres. It's right along the Gallatin River, which used to be a Blue Ribbon River, which is now impaired, federally designated as an impaired river. And we had some really big concerns. The gravel pit sits directly over an aquifer, which is everybody's drinking water, particularly those north. So we had a lot of concerns about an open pit mine, particularly because we also have really high winds here, reaching 80 to 100 miles an hour. So a lot of dust in the air, little particulates, fugitive dusts like silica dust, which can cause permanent lung damage. And the only solution to it is getting a lung transplant. So we came together as a result of being notified that a permit was going to be issued. And so the community came together and we wanted to talk to the DEQ, and that's what we did. That's how we got started.
Wow. Was it hard for you to form this group?
No, people were pretty fired up.
Good.
So that was the immediate people that got notified came together in an emergency meeting the next day in a neighbor's barn. And then after that, we got postcards and we did door to door, letting everybody know that there would be a DEQ public meeting. And we had standing room only. The room whole seated 250 people, but it was standing room, so we had more than that come. And that made a really big impact in a lot of our cases moving forward, because we had so much input from the community and so many people showing up that even the courts have ruled in our favor as a result of that.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's good news. Can you review again why it matters to your community, your environment, or the habitat?
Absolutely. So there's several factors that concern us about this particular gravel pit. One, its location. It's in the heart of a community. It's right next to the Gallatin River. It is also in the direct path of the elk migration. Another nonprofit has been working on getting a wildlife bridge put in, and this kind of disrupted some of that. It's also on one of the most dangerous highways in the US, 191. Between elk hits and just accidents from people speeding, it's a pretty dangerous road. The speed limit here in this particular stretch where this gravel pit was gonna be put in is 70 miles an hour. And the huge trucks that would be pulling out onto this road in front of tourists, we have about 15,000 tourists a day that use this road going up to the Big Sky and the other resorts. So it would be really just detrimental to the community. It wouldn't really bring value to the community, wouldn't bring any jobs. Economy-wise, it really didn't help us out at all. And then obviously the impacts of the pit itself is that it would potentially leak various things into our aquifer, potentially blowing the dust into the Gallatin River, which then would erode the rocks in the Gallatin River, which would then impact the fishery. The noise level, the decibel level is pretty high from the rock crusher. They are going to have a rock crusher on site if the pit does end up going in. And so between wildlife, water, and community, it would have a pretty major impact on the area.
Okay, thank you. Do you collaborate with other groups or causes?
Yeah, we've been working with the Turner Foundation. That was one of our biggest supporters in our first year to help us get up and running. The Upper Missouri Water Keepers, we collaborated with them in the beginning as well, and their legal counsel. We've worked with Gallatin Wildlife Association, I've actually attended a community nonprofit. So we have several community nonprofits in the area, and we kind of came together over the summer and sat down and really had a discussion about where Gallatin Gateway's future is and how, as a community, we can help shape that. I also attended a nonprofit seminar in Bozeman at the museum. I think Todd Wilkinson was talking, and before then, all the local nonprofits, the environmental nonprofits, could get together. The Center for Large Landscapes, that's the one that's working on the wildlife bridge. And so I talk with them and check in with them and seeing where that wildlife bridge is, where they're at with that. They've kind of stumbled a little bit with getting their grants from the federal government. So yeah, we definitely communicate and talk. And then one that I've actually partnered with the community is Grow Wild. Absolutely love that nonprofit. They came out to speak about invasive species of weeds and what we could do to help keep our plants native and help our local wildlife by keeping the plants native. So we did that at the community center.
Fantastic. Have you been able to permanently stop this mining operation, or is it still in process?
It's still in process. It's probably going to be an 8 to 10 year process. We're on year 3 right now. Mm-hmm. We just won our Montana Environmental Protection Agency lawsuit. So we were suing DEQ for violating our constitutional rights to participate in MEPA, the environmental assessment of this gravel pit. Mm-hmm. And the judge ruled in our favor because we had so many people that were concerned about this pit, and that was part of the requirement. You have to have a large outcry from the community or they will allow it to go forward. And our judge saw all of our comments and realized that the community did not get to participate in the environmental assessment or review it or provide commentary. And as a result of that, they lost it. So moving forward, we have to submit some briefs and we have to jump through a couple more hoops, but that would potentially void the permit and the pit would not be allowed to go in.
Wow. Wow. So it's really important for just everyday people to make their voice heard when they have the opportunity, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes we feel so, you know, ineffective, but your point is really a good one to remember. Let's see. And how can listeners learn more and or support your group too?
Yeah. So gatewayconservationalliance.org, or they can go to a shorter URL. We've got two of them, gcamt.org. You can sign up for the newsletter there. I try to push out a newsletter every 3 months, making sure that everybody is up to date on the latest and greatest of what's happening. In addition, we do have a Facebook page and an Instagram page that highlights things that are going on with us, things that are going on with other nonprofit in the area, particularly ones that are fighting pits, like Protect the Clearwater. There's a couple other pits around here that have nonprofits that we like to highlight and work with. And yeah, so our site and our newsletter are probably the two best places to start. And then just following us on Facebook or Instagram, whatever your social media situation is. And that's how you can kind of stay up on the latest and greatest of what's going on with Montana law.
Wow. Thank you, Tracy. Was there anything I didn't ask about that you want to be sure that our listeners know?
Yeah. We have a second lawsuit against the state. We are suing the state for violating our constitutional rights to a clean and healthful environment. Mm-hmm. That is currently being appealed to a judge. The judge that ruled on it said that we needed to go to the Bureau of Environmental Review. That, unfortunately, that Bureau is not allowed to rule on anything that involves constitutional challenges, so we have to appeal it to another judge. But, you know, part of our nonprofit, we didn't want to just make a little impact. We wanted to make a statewide impact. And so that's where we're trying to push that forward and making sure that we're protecting all Montanans' rights to a clean and healthful environment, since it is in our Constitution and it is one of our rights.
Ah, good on you. This last question, would you like to share a meaningful personal experience that you've had in the environment where you live, whether that's the Gallatin River or the area around what you're trying to protect. Yeah.
I mean, I have elk in my backyard. I have weasels. I've got eagles. We have bobcats that come through. You know, just seeing the diverse environment here and respecting that and working with it while understanding, you know, we have to support the economy. I get that, but we can do it responsibly. And I just want to make sure that our state and those who represent us understand that, you know, we're all about growth, but we want to do it responsibly. Last summer, I actually watched an elk cow give birth in my backyard. It was amazing to see. Walking down my road, I was walking my dogs, and an elk calf was curled up right on the side of our road. The mom had just tucked her way right there. And it's like, you know, how many people get to say, oh, I walked by an elk baby today. It's, you know, it's magical. And, you know, these are the things that we have to protect.
Yes.
And again, protect, but protect responsibly as we grow and make sure that we're sharing the space and not taking it over.
Wow. You've said it so well. Thank you very, very much, Tracy. And I hope to keep an eye on what you guys are doing. And, oh, do you have any events or anything coming up that we didn't cover?
Not as of right now. I've been quite busy. I have a day job. but that's eased up a little bit. So I'm hoping to do some events in the spring. Usually we have auctions. A lot of local artists give us art pieces for us to auction off to help raise money and awareness. I'd like to partner with Grow Wild again and bring attention to the work that they're doing because they're just so amazing. They're a great nonprofit. And I want to continue working with the Gallatin Wildlife Association because they're doing some pretty amazing things. So hopefully I'll be able to do a collaborative event and get people out and get people excited about everything that's going on in our community.
Okay. Well, maybe if I see something like that coming up, I'll call you again. You can tell us more about it. Okay.
Great. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Tracy. The second interview I share with you today is a longtime Bozeman creative who is literally lighting up the darkness of winter, among other actions. Could you please introduce yourself and who you represent?
I am Anna Vischer, and I am Whimsy and Wonder Director at Random Acts of Silliness. And what that actually means is that I am our Creative and Communications Director.
Very cool. And how did Random Acts of Silliness come to be?
Random Acts had a really kind of organic beginning in 2020 during the height of the pandemic. Our founder and executive director was stuck at home with small kids, and they made a fairy house and stuck it out on a trail near their house. And people started adding to it, and it just became this really wonderful, sweet thing that summer. And then that later in the summer, she approached me and said, hey, this was really fun. Can we do this on a bigger scale? And she knew that I knew a lot of artists from my previous work. And so we reached out to everyone we knew, and she and I also participated as housemakers, and we just created this little fairy village right off of the Galligator Trail in the fall of 2020, and it was magical from day one. People came up to me with tears streaming down their faces saying, thank you. Thank you for having something that is lighthearted and joyful and safe to be at and non-divisive. And it just really, for both of us, I think at that point, it just felt like this is what we need to do. This is important work. And we never intended to create a nonprofit that had ongoing long-term events, but here we are 5 years later. And it just feels like this work is still relevant and still important and will continue to be so.
And you talked about how it kind of began with a fairy village, as I understand. And what other projects do you do every year?
So at this point, we do three large projects a year. The fairy village is our original and biggest event that happens every fall. And then we have in late fall, early winter, we do a Cranky Fest. And then in February, we do a Lantern Parade. So those are our three big events. And then we do smaller kind of fun pop-ups here and there throughout the year as well.
Nice. Can you talk about why it matters to our community health?
More and more research is showing that access to public art actually has huge mental and physical health benefits. And I just see it. I see it in the work. I see every event we do, people will come in looking kind of downcast or hurried or tired, and they leave with big grins on their faces and with a little more bounce in their step. It just, to me, feels vitally important that we retain our ability to experience joy and whimsy, no matter what age we are. I think it's vital to being human and to connecting with the humans around us.
I totally agree. And who designs these creations?
At first it was Danielle and I, and we have grown to be a small team now. We have another producer, but it has mostly been Danielle and I for the past 5 years.
Could you talk about the event you have coming up?
Yeah, so we have this sort of month and a half of lanterns where we are having community drop-in workshops where people can learn to decorate their own lanterns. And then the big weekend is February 20th and 21st. And on the 20th, we're going to have a mini parade where younger kids and folks who have trouble with the uneven terrain at the park can come and have a very accessible, very inclusive small parade with the large lantern puppets that we have in the parade. So that'll be our kind of kickoff event. And then on Saturday the 21st, we'll have the big Menagerie of the Imaginary Lantern Parade. This is our third year, and it has grown every year. And it just really feels like a time of year when we really need some light and color in our lives, which is why we picked that time.
And could you repeat, please, the location and the times for those two parades?
Yeah, so the mini parade will be Friday, February 20th, starting at 6 p.m. at Gallatin County Fairgrounds.
Okay.
And the large lantern parade will be Saturday, February 20th, starting also at 6 p.m. at Gallatin Regional Park.
The Saturday one, is that the 21st?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry,
okay.
Did I say that wrong?
I might have heard the 20th, but...
Okay.
It's okay. And that one starts at 6 p.m. 6 p.m. as well for the...
Yes. Gallatin Regional Park.
Yes. Is there any admission?
No. Everything Random Acts does is free and open to the public. We never charge for anything. And that's a big part of our mission, is that it be accessible to everyone.
Okay.
We are a small nonprofit, and so we do appreciate donations when people are able, but it is never required.
Great. Can you give me information of if listeners want to learn more and maybe even support your group? Can you tell me how they can do that?
Yeah. Everything anyone could ever want to know about Random Acts of Silliness is on our website, and that's randomactsofsilliness.com.
Nice. All one word?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything I did not ask about that you want to be sure our listeners know?
If you have time in the interview, I can tell you a little bit about the special project that's happening this year, where we also have a group of local artists who are working together to create a new large puppet lantern. We made two last year, and so this is the third that will be in the parade, and they're huge. They're many, many feet long, and they can bend down and interact with people. This one will have wings that flap. It's going to be a giant phoenix.
I love it.
So that's a really exciting part of the parade. And people who go to the mini parade can meet those three lanterns up close, which is a fun part of that event.
Yeah, I think I heard it described as a petting zoo.
Yes.
I love that. Nice. Did you want to say anything more about that? Because I think that is just wonderful.
Yeah, so another big part of our mission is to support local artists. Mm-hmm. Artists get asked to do things for free all the time, and we just really wanted to be a source of support for artists as well as the general public. And so we pay our artists. It's not always a commensurate rate for the number of hours they put in, but it's really important to us that they get paid for what they do with us. And so these artists learned how to make large lanterns last year with an expert who came all the way from England, Andrew Kim. Mm. And he taught them how last year, and this year they are on their own making this lantern, and we are paying them to do that.
Oh, it's incredible. Would you like to share any meaningful personal experience that you've had with random acts of silliness?
Really, from the first event that we did, that was the very first Fairy Village, I just have been blown away by how much this work impacts people and therefore is so needed. And I've really come to believe that this is my calling. I really feel incredibly lucky that I get to do this as a job. And that we get to continue on into the future doing this work kind of feels like a dream come true to me.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Well, thank you so much for making the time to let me talk with you today. And I only wish good things for Random Acts of Silliness. And one last thing. So when is the next? You talked about the workshops where people can come in and help create globes or lanterns, I guess. And when is the next of those workshops coming up?
The next workshop will be the weekend of January 24th and 25th.
Okay.
And then we'll have a final one the weekend of February 7th and 8th.
Okay. And what time should people show up? That's at the fairgrounds?
Yeah, all the times are on our website. Okay. They're kind of different for each workshop.
Okay. And these are very well attended, so people might want to come in at, you know, like right at the start time or a little before, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. This is in answer to your question about the meaningfulness of this work myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going to cry when I say it. I recently, about a year ago, was diagnosed with a really aggressive form of leukemia and had to take almost a year off of work to get treatment. Mm-hmm. And knowing that this work was still happening and that I could go back to it afterwards really was a big part of what kept me going, and that solidified for me the importance of this kind of joyful work in this time in my life that was so hard. I really got that we're all going through hard stuff all the time, and we just have to lean into the joyful cute community connection that this work provides.
That's powerful. Wow.
Thank
you, Anna.
Thank you so much, Roxana.
Well, my special thanks today to DJ Monica and to Tracy from Gateway Conservation Alliance, and to Anna from Random Acts of Silliness. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks all the volunteers and supporters and underwriters of KGVM, and thanks to you for listening. Remember, you can leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-424-6246. I would love to hear what you have to say about inspiration in your life. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio Replay episodes are archived for you on the kgbm.org website. Don't give up on the snow. Watch the skies. Keep doing good things and sweet dreams. Stay well, and I'll see you next week. We're going to have Arcade Fire take us out with their song Wake Up from their collection Funeral from 2004. See you next week.